Hello and welcome to the Spooky Chris Podcast. My name is Chris Ringler. I am your host and I am thrilled to have you join me today. I am an author and podcaster, reviewer, general ne'er-do-well. You can find all my stuff at spookychris.com. Today I am joined by author and comedian Marco Gamboa. Marco is the author of Within Normal Limits, a heartbreaking and fascinating book about dealing with multiple sclerosis and kind of reckoning with your life and your past and trying to kind of put your affairs in order as you face kind of a draining clock. Marco has approached his own multiple sclerosis diagnosis with, a very honest look that you see in Within Normal Limits and with humor. He is very much focused on finding the hope and the reality in these kind of situations, and I am excited to speak with him and hope you will stay tuned and listen to this this talk we're going to have. You can find all the stuff at WNLMARCO.com. So WNLMARCO.com, and I look forward to this discussion. Now, thank you very much for joining me, Marco Gamboa. How are you?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
I'm very, very well. I'm honored to have you join me tonight.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm really excited to talk to you.
I appreciate it. Your book now Within Normal Limits is your first book. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. If all goes well, I have a second out here in October. For now, this is my first.
And it is a heck of a powerful book. It's heartbreaking and revelatory. And I have to ask before I even get into anything else, like how much, the main character is named Marco. It's obviously how much is fact, how much is fiction? Because it feels like it's a fictionalized you or a sensationalized you, because obviously it goes places that I don't know that your life has gone, but how much of you is in this?
So that's the question. So not much. So let me kind of give a bit of back. So I got in 20 and I was misdiagnosed for about 10 years. Because things weren't better before I met, I was agoraphobic. I was leaving, I had feeling ill, and I was out. And so what I realized that I did after I was done was I wrote a story of what would have happened if things never got better, if I wasn't able to lead a normal life. And it almost came a worse scenario thing that I did therapeutically to kind of accept that sometimes life isn't the perfect story, right? Yeah. Luckily, finally 20, God knows, got on amazing occasions, and was able to, go back to quote unquote a normal life. There's very little in that book that is real. My kids are tiny. Well, to me, they're still tiny. They're 11 and 13. In the book, the girls are much older. Never been to Colorado. Another one that I love to talk is, people always say that tree chapter was something, right? Like that was this huge thing. And I always laugh because I did have a tree that I cut down for the sole purpose that the pool guy was going to raise my rate like 100 and something bucks because of all the junk that tree was dropping into the pool. And so I don't have much of the book again really aligned to my life aside from the MS, it was more just thinking just nightmare scenarios, right? Like I don't know, Chris, if you ever, double anxiety or, anything like that, but or folks around you, but sometimes you just picture the absolute worst. And I think what I wanted to do was to put it on paper, imagine it, and be okay with it. And again, luckily I'm on the very positive side of things, travel, did some cool stuff last year. So there's not a lot, but again, it was just kind of like, well, what happens, right, if I can't have these relationships? What happens if, my relationship with the daughters is very distant because I tend to always be 20 steps in the worst than what is actually in front of me. And so yeah, I don't know if that answered the question, but not much in there is real aside from names and the diagnosis.
I mean that's an incredible accomplishment then, because again, like I, if reading it, it if and not know we'll say and not knowing you and knowing your story intimately, I didn't feel like, well, this is it was obvious it wasn't like 1-to-1, but that's a heck of a coping mechanism to look at it as this is the absolute worst I can imagine. Anything better than this is a step forward, and then you go from there. And that's an accomplishment. That's a heck of an accomplishment. That's cheers to you. That's great.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's crazy because it's opened up the doors. So I went and started doing readings, and I just felt awful because I thought, these people came out, maybe got babysitters, it's their day off, whatever the case is, and I'm just making them sad. And the chapter in the book where the character deals with loss, and he tells a joke. And so what I started to do in my readings was like, hey guys, well, the book is sad. I tell them exactly what I told you, like I don't, the book doesn't have answers, but if you're going through it and you feel alone, you can read this and realize that other people are kind of going through it too. Then I would just transition into, just kind of telling jokes that I grew up with, funny stories, things like that. And that's what opened the door for book number two. Is a comedian got a hold of me. He housed a huge festival here in San Antonio. I handed him the book. I said, here you go. I didn't hear from him for a real long time. And then he came back and said, hey man, I love what you did. I love how you pulled, he's like, I don't know a lot about the characters, he said, but I felt so close to characters. And he's like, I really want to write like a youth horror novel. And I need that type of melancholy to bring folks in and tie in, some humorous aspects as well. And so it's a crazy transition, a muscle that I'm not used to flexing, but I looked at the opportunity and thought, hey, why not try to learn something different? Why not try to, see what else I could do with the craft that I've really come to love and cherish about myself.
That's amazing. And again, like it's a heck of a sleight of hand, because I think a lot of, especially a work like this, that it does feel very intimate. It feels very personal. And I think readers will say, oh God, that's him. That is absolutely him. And they think so many of a writer's works are exactly about them and stuff. And to use that kind of to your advantage is that's great. So, and now that you're kind of able to, reap benefits from having put this out, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. And then of course, at a more granular level, one of the things that I've really enjoyed is, as people have read it and gone through it, there's been such a beautiful connection and amazing friends with folks that I've met at readings, through podcasts, through just, folks reaching out. It's been really incredible to kind of match with people. Again, maybe it's not an MS diagnosis. Maybe it's a, marriage problems or other chronic health problems. But there's this thing that I realize that the book is so vulnerable because people do assume it's me. And in a way, it is me because, it was in my head, right? So there is that vulnerability still there. And the character is not painted in a positive light. And I think that it's opened the door for these amazing, connections. with PPAT then feel the ability to in their own way be vulnerable with it, whether it's with me and through connecting or so on or just sharing their own story, right? I don't know how many times, Chris, with your background as well, people say like, hey, maybe writing is an outlet for me too, right? Like, and so you place this little bit of hope of like, hey, we live in a world where it's relatively easy to publish. I was really like, and I never thought a publisher would have picked me up, but they did. But I was fully prepared to say like, hey, we live in a world where it's so easy to kind of do this on your own that you could still put your art out there and still have a really positive experience with connecting with some folks. Folks that I would have, I can't, Chris, I don't know one person in Germany, and for some crazy reason, my sales in Germany have been really good. The book's not even in German, so I don't know if
Wow.
I don't know how that happened, but it's been, it's just this really cool thing to say like, hey, I created this story through really bad times, and look at what it's done on its own, the little intricacies that it's created on its own to connect folks, connect me with folks, and so on.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, your book has served almost as kind of a key that opens these doors to people and to have a conversation and to, have a connection. Say, like, you're showing, I would imagine, one of your most vulnerable sides with this and with your coming to terms with having MS and living with it, and allows other people to kind of open up to you and to the book. And that's fantastic.
Yeah, I one of the th sorry, I think I cut you off.
No, you're fine.
One of the things that I've also really enjoyed is the way that the book was originally created. So the original intent of the book was I figured I'm not going to get better. I'm going to write this and I'll gift it to my to my kids, right? And they'll be like, maybe dad didn't lead a normal life, but he made us this, right? This spent his time when he wasn't working or whatever the case was. And originally, what I wanted to do was I depicted emotions, right? Loneliness, hope, fear, whatever the emotion was. My thought was, is I'm going to write a short story where the emotion should really be the central character, and then the characters, the dialogue, the situation is just kind of like the colors to paint that emotion. And one of the things that really blew me away is once I had editors kind of look at this and say, hey man, if you rearrange this, it's a book. You have a novel. There's a progression, there's these different kind of connectivity points between each story that would read it. And so one of the things that I've loved now going back, I actually just reread it during the holiday break and realized like, man, this is so different than what I had originally, even in not only from an intent perspective, but from a, like an overarching theme. I never thought, oh man, this is going to be a novel. And so that was something that I really, again, from a therapeutic perspective, I went back and realized, man, this book started kind of like a diary, a fake diary, but it started almost like a diary. And then originally the book was written in first person, and I realized like, hey, this is such a this isn't really, when you're looking at any disease or any struggle, it's so easy to look at it from a first person perspective and kind of just, I hope this doesn't come off wrong. A lot of times when I read these in a first person, sometimes you get that victimhood kind of mentality. And
Okay, yeah.
I thought, you know what? I don't want this to be that, because if, fictional Marco didn't handle things correctly, and had I just kept it in first person, I don't think you would have realized how it impacted the kids, right? Like in the conversations that they have by themselves, how it would have impacted his relationships, how it would have impacted, the connections that he had with neighbors. And I thought, what a disservice to the plight of someone struggling with not looking at how it could impact other people. And so That was one of those things too, where it's such a unique take when you look back at what it originally was, that I kind of fell in love with it more reading it again, and unfortunately catching typos left and right. But it was still one of those things that when I look back and think of those times, and it's such a powerful thing. And I hope people realize, whether it's writing or whatever the case is, I feel like creativity can be such a powerful medicine or coping mechanism, whatever the case is, to really kind of help you deal with what's in your head, right? What you're dealing with alone, without someone sometimes being able to intervene and kind of like, oh no, you're going to be okay, or whatever the case is, right?
Well, and you've talked, on other podcasts and about how kind of you've used humor as a coping mechanism to deal with your MS. Has it always been a way you've kind of dealt with things in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. It's two things. I come from a very vulgar, hilarious family. The joke that you read in the book, that is real. My great grandmother taught me that joke when I was probably like in third grade. But at the same time, I had, just like many, many other people, I had a really, really rough upbringing. And one of the things that I realized is I was able to neutralize a situation with humor. And so I think it's also a little bit of a tool that I have whenever there seems to be that tension in the room, or just some sort of like, hey, something feels off. You kind of there's something about self-deprecation and just jokes and the vulnerability of like people thinking like, man, he said it, and there's a good chance no one was going to laugh. And so like I said, on the plus side, it's been an awesome way, because I feel like it helps me kind of face my fears. I feel like when you laugh, you kind of laugh at the fear. At the same time, I keep going back to where, and the character does it too, right? When he confronts the neighbor's spouse, where he starts making jokes about the rooster and just, things like that. And so it is something I've always done. It's something that, again, depending on who you tell me, they say, you're just it's not healthy to avoid it that way. But at the same time, like, I feel like it's helped me in many, many ways diffuse a situation, or just try to just kind of try to like, hey, let's reset, move on, and so on.
Now, do you ever kind of, especially having reread the book recently, do you look at it kind of how you may have written it now? Like, having a little more experience as an author and knowing kind of, where you are on your journey right now, can you see how you may have written, written things differently? Or, and again, not to say that you dislike how it is today, but can you see what, ways that you might have changed things?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now, so here's a fun thing. So I've worked in, not specifically as a coder, but I've worked, kind of managing the work that coders do for a really long time. And the way that coders release is in iterations, right? And so it's you kind of you have an overarching goal. This is how you're going to achieve the goal, and then at a very granular level, this is kind of what you do to kind of climb that ladder up to say, like, did I hit this mark? Did I do this right? Do I need to go back and revise it? And it's weird, because when I started this book, it was just this dumping of emotions. And, I just, it was very general. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't, as I wrote these short stories, it was very much just kind of, I was only focused on the short story. I was never focused. Retrospectively, I think, knowing what I know now, I think the story was always in me. It was just I didn't know how to put it to paper until these amazing editors came in and said, like, hey, let's take a look at this, and what about that, and maybe we can do this. And so that feedback loop, it's tough, right? Because on one hand, I never want to write for the audience, because then I feel like I'll struggle what I'm really trying to say, because then it turns into I'm trying to sell you something. thing, right?
Yeah,
But
yeah.
at the same time, I really wish I would have brought in peers earlier to say, hey, can you take a look at this? Can you poke holes through it? And now, as I'm writing this book, the second book, I'm absolutely doing that. I'm going back and forth with the comedian or being in other folks to say, like, hey, what do you think about this? How do you think about that? You know, again, it's a very different thing, right? This is more comedy, this is horror, this is youth oriented. And so I do think that that's the case. Now, where I, so here's something. I was so amazingly lonely when I wrote this book. Whereas now, because I've been able to live through that, I've developed this amazing support system, amazing friendships, very deep connections with family. And in a weird way, had I right away felt sick, got a diagnosis, gotten the support that I had, Chris, I don't know that I'd be sitting here talking to you because I don't know. I don't, sometimes I wonder if I would have even written, right? You know, and so it's weird because I do think I could have gone back and done it better, but at the exact same time, I'm mindset now where I just have such a positive outlook on life. I didn't back then. You know, I did, like I said, I didn't leave the house. There were people thought I was crazy, right? Because it was really hard to explain the disease. So there was this solitary kind of tone to the time that I think fed to it. So yeah, I'd love to say, and you know, maybe one day I'll get bored and kind of rewrite it just for myself, just to see like what it would look like now. But at the exact same time, I don't know that without the chaos in the in which I wrote it, if I could have written the book that I'm so proud of today. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. What's interesting is as you saying all this, it makes me wonder in the future, say, X amount of years, and you decided like, oh, I want to revisit this, and you basically took the other side of the mirror. Like, okay, I wrote what the worst case scenario was. What happened to that Marco if the worst case didn't happen?
You know, it's crazy because you know, I've never been to Colorado. For some reason, there's something inside me that's attached to Colorado. But now, if I were to go to Colorado, the way that I had a connection in Colorado, which by the way, you know, that relationship completely made up.
Wow.
I just, you know, it's one of those things where I think if I, when I have a chance to go up there, the kids are dying to go. I think it's called Colorado Springs. But you know, it's one of those things where I think the emotion is very different, right? As opposed to some sort of possibility of not being lonely the way that the character was. To me, it would just be like, hey, isn't it weird that this was the setting that you put in, never being here, never not knowing much about it. I think that's something I would like to revisit, right? Is kind of visit these places, visit the home I used to live in where I primarily wrote the book and just kind of, you know, reminisce like that. And that's what I think I would do if I ever played around with revisions or alternate versions of it, is kind of go back and retrospectively try to rewrite it. Although I think there is going to be more of a lens of hope because I know how the real story ends.
Yeah. No, I can totally see that. Now, can you get a little more into kind of what the reception for the book has been? Like, has it? What did you expect when the book came out, and how has it been received?
You know, I've gotten really amazing feedback. The feedback that, you know, I have to talk to people through is, so of course, when you publish a book, the first ones that pick it up are your friends and family. And you know, I love them for it just because it shows they care. But I can't tell you how many folks were like, Marco, I'm so sorry. Like, I couldn't finish the book because I had no idea that happened to you. And that's when you got to pick up the phone and be like, hey, that never happened. You know, that, you know, because so much connectivity with these friendships was lost over the period, And a lot of folks, something was wrong, but didn't know. They just figured Marco needs space. And so that was one of the unique things, right? Where, my own dad, at one point, there's, the backwards kangaroo joke in the book of essentially piggyback. And he showed up one morning just super emotional and was like, I've never seen you guys do backwards kangaroo. Like, that's, and I was like, Dad, say it out loud. They're gonna have no idea what you're talking about. That, and so that was one of the really hard parts to letting people know, like, hey, I'm okay. I'm not the person there. Outside of that, for folks who have read it and emailed me or written reviews or whatever the case is, it was like, man, this was really cool. And one of the saddest parts about it is I'm actually keeping track. So I've done 23 podcasts probably in the past month or so. And I, as of today, have 11 of those 23 were in the interview. And a good chunk of these won't publish until this month or February, but a good chunk of these, the host will say, my wife, my brother, my mother. And one of the saddest things as I've gone through this, I already felt it in connecting with support groups and so on, but there are so many of them mess out there. And that's been another really interesting thing because you don't have the people with MS. It's funny because when I talk to my MS friends, they're like, I have MS. I'm not going to read your book. I know how it goes, right? And so there's this joke between us where it's like, man, like, we're good. But at the same time, a lot of folks who have known people with MS are the ones that connect to the book more because they say, I feel like I understand my sister better, or whoever it is that in their circle has MS. They realize like it's such a weird disease because it impacts so many. It looks so differently for every individual. I mean, you look at support groups and you'll have folks all across the spectrum, right? You have me who's, if you look at me, you're like, man, this guy's perfectly fine now. You have other folks who are strapped to wheelchairs because, they no longer have the ability to even hold themselves up. And so it looks so different yet is prevalent. And for those folks who didn't really understand it in reading the book, they somehow feel like they can connect to the part that they don't understand of the individual they know who is afflicted.
Wow. I mean, and then that's, and how has this all affected you? Like, in a weird way, it's almost like folks you expect you to be kind of a spokesperson. How has that affected you?
I love that you asked that. So I do feel that people, so, and I've said this in a few podcasts, like, listen, I no longer have an affiliation with the MS Society. I used to run groups with them and, that, for folks listening to this, if you know someone and you don't know who to turn to, reach out to me. I still have a lot of friends in the MS Society that I can point you to and help out. Now, that being said, one of the things that people who don't have MS do kind of view me as like, oh man, well, you're that action, right? I feel awful that I don't remember his name, but Laverne and Shirley, there was a guy, Squiggy,
Oh,
and
yeah.
he had MS, and he wrote this book where he hid it for so long, and then it turned into this thing where, everyone was like, oh my gosh, you're the voice. You're the voice for those who can't speak, right? Who don't have your platform. And I think that's awesome. But what I say over and over and over again is if you want to talk and I can listen, I can meet up with folks virtually in person. I love making friendships. I love hanging out, having drinks with, random people. But I cannot offer solutions. And I think that that's in this day and age, it's so tricky because everyone is selling something, right? It's so easy to open up any type of social media thing and just sell something, right? There's so much coaching and
Yeah.
life coaching and things like that, which is awesome. I'll never dog on anybody for making a buck. I am not that though. I will listen. If I know of support, I'll point you in that direction. But I'm more the buddy, regardless of who it is, that you could just call and say, like, hey, man, this is going on. And, and it's just that's just in my nature. I can't, I don't have a, I wrote a book, but I never solved it. Right. And so it's one of those things where I can offer you support, but I can't offer you solutions. And I think that that's where what that spokesperson that put on the spot of like, what are you going to do? I've had sort of like, well, you need to use your platform for XYZ. And it's just, I'm not that, I wrote a book, I have MS, but I am not MS. Right. And that's where I kind of have to create a boundary, because if I completely identify with the disease, I sometimes feel like I run the struggle of becoming that fictional Marco, where I'll constantly be thinking of what the worst case scenario is. The original title of the book was The Long Goodbye. And for the life of me, I've been trying to think about it recently. I don't remember at what point it changed into Within the Limits, but I think that when you get put on the spot to offer solution and you don't have the solution, you kind of start to find the flaws and worry about what you kind of can't control, specific to me and MS, right? Because I mean, you could do anything in the world. There's no cure for it. And so it's hard to be a spokesperson for something that you can't control. For me, right? Again, if others do it, that's awesome. But just for me personally, like I can't, I kind of can't take on that type of role.
No, I admire that though. I admire that you are honest and upfront about that. And not at least, doing your best not to let people force you into to that. That's very admirable. So folks that pick the book up, so where can I'll before I even get to the question, where can folks find it?
So the book is available all online retail, whether you're Amazon or Target, Noble, Walmart, where you do your online shopping and everything else, you should be able to. But if not, those are the biggest to carry. You connect with me at wnlmarco.com, and through there you can get it. My hope is, on top of that other book that we're hoping this year, I'm actually working with someone to put this in an audio version as well. So
Awesome.
hopefully that'll come out here soon. And yeah, but yeah, that, like I said, that's the easiest way to connect and kind of see what links and projects are coming out.
Okay. And so what I was going to get to then is what do you hope folks like so when they close the book and the story's over, what do you hope they kind of come away with?
I hope they come away with, regardless of what issue you're going through, the book is a testament that sometimes the way you see it is worse than it actually is. I try to live very much by Mark Twain, and I'm going to butcher his quote, but it says, the worst things in my life never actually happened, right? They were just kind of things that you catastrophize, I think is how you say it. But I think that is what people come out of the book, right? Is that they see what beauty Marco should have seen, but maybe didn't, because he was so concerned with all that was wrong. And I hope that in the painting of what I've done with the book, that you attach to those emotions and find a way in and of yourself to kind of draw back and just take it as a story, but also take it as someone who went through it, hopefully not in a similar way. Hopefully it's much lighter for you. But the common connector, I think, to all of us is that we have some sort of struggle and we want to feel alone in it. But hopefully, opposite to fictional Marco, you find those connections and you really leverage them to kind of find the positive outlook in life.
That's fantastic. You've talked about what you're currently working on. Have you kind of prognosticated past the next project? Kind of do you have are you starting to get kind of like that itch in the back of your brain of other t stories you want to tell or other things, other ways you want to challenge yourself?
I do. I do. I There's a couple little things. I love the art of the short story. And so I feel like although I love Within Normal Limits, I do want to take a stab at another collection of short stories. And this time be more mindful. Okay, you really have to separate this so that it's not viewed as a book. I love the idea, Raymond Carver. I love that idea where you can just draw these just intense connections to 5 pages, 6 pages. I know some of his stories are a lot longer, but I love that fantasy of knowing so little but wanting so much, or loving so much of what was painted. And I think that once I finish this horror book, I really think that, the last half of 25 and hopefully 26, first half, I can really knock that out. I have a bunch of outlines of what I want to do. But that to me just it's something fun. And I know that's not really the niche nowadays for stories, but I don't know. There, like I said, there's just a love that I have with that, that I'd really love to be a part of.
That's fantastic. Now, and I cannot thank you enough for finding time to speak with me. How can folks track you down? Can you give your website again?
Yeah, absolutely. WNLMarco.com.
And is
And
there?
then,
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Go right ahead. Sorry.
no, yeah. And I know web pages sometimes are antiquated. I'm pretty active on Instagram, which is the same username, which is just WNL Marco. And from there, I post whenever I'm on podcasts. You can connect with me. I can point you in the direction of books. I also get an allotment every here and there for free books. So folks are like, hey, I can't afford it, but I'm really curious. I'm more than happy to send you guys a free copy if I have that allotment. And yeah, that's the best way to stay in touch with me.
Fantastic. I really, yeah, I hope more folks check your work out. It's really, really great stuff and very powerful. And I thank you so much for making time to speak to me. And I wish the best to you.
Thank you so much, Chris. Have a great evening.
You take care, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Once more, I have to thank Marco Gamboa for joining me today on the podcast. That was an amazing talk we had. Within Normal Limits is a it's a fascinating book, and like I said before, it's a heartbreaking book, but I think a lot of people will really get something powerful out of it. It's definitely a full-faced look at facing down something like multiple sclerosis and just kind of taking it head on, and that's what Marco has been doing in his life since the diagnosis. And it was a pleasure to speak to him. I look forward to seeing what else he does. And again, you can track down his stuff at WNLMARCO.com. Thank you, everybody. You take care. We'll talk to you soon.